Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Gary. Yet another warning that today's podcast deals with Deshaun Watson and therefore mature topics that are probably not appropriate for younger listeners. With that said, enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to a special edition of the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Gary Bramling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And Connor, we have gathered here to talk about the resolution, perhaps final resolution, in the Deshaun Watson suspension saga. Still an outstanding civil case, so that has to be taken care of. But as far as football is concerned, this seems to be settled, or maybe not. We'll get to that in just a moment here. But let me lay out the terms first, and then we'll open up the discussion here. So Watson has settled with the NFL. Watson, sort of represented by both the Players Association and his own camp, his own legal team, and his agency. The terms are 11 games for the suspension, which would bring him back for a Week 13 game against Houston, a $5 million fine. He is also to undergo mandatory counseling. Now, things got a little bit, I don't know, pushed back into a gray area because part of this was clearly, based on the NFL's language in their press release, based on Watson showing contrition. He had given an apology, or what could loosely be termed an apology, before their first preseason game last week. And as soon as word of settlement came out, he and his camp just sort of did the opposite of an apology, said he was innocent, said that the NFL's investigation was flawed and that, you know, Judge Sue Robinson made a mistake and et cetera, et cetera. So what kind of door might this crack open as far as the terms of the settlement go?
So, yeah, when you had mentioned that maybe we had reached a resolution, I wanted to jump in. Had this not been, you know, serious subject matter, I might have jumped in with like a Lee Corso, not so fast, my friend, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think if you read the language and just from talking to people yesterday, the NFL is appointing a behavioral expert to oversee this case. And the behavioral expert now is going to be charged with determining whether Deshaun Watson has been rehabilitated in this time period over the next 11 weeks plus however much time. Now, I don't know. He had said a couple weeks ago that he was doing counseling through the Browns. I don't know if that time is going to be included. I don't know if that whatever he'd been doing in those counseling sessions is going to be included in this new third party. It would seem whatever counseling he has already received with the Browns has emboldened his stance that he did nothing wrong. So I don't know if the NFL wants to try a different person or a different avenue here. But if at the end of week 11, the third-party behavioral expert comes to the NFL and says, yeah, he's going to walk right back out here and say that he didn't do anything wrong. I don't think the guy thinks he's done anything wrong. It's probably not a great idea to have him in front of a microphone or being the ambassador of a city via the NFL, then the NFL is going to not let him back on the field. And so we're left with this sort of sliding scale that the NFL has to deal with. Are they going to continue to try to aggressively or somewhat aggressively, right? Because I don't know, the NFL appealed, but then they kind of fell back on the second suspension. So are they going to be aggressive here, or are they going to hope that in 11 weeks people stop caring about it and then they're just going to throw them back out there and just pray that nothing bad happens? We will see. But my guess would be if the anonymous language and the rhetoric from Watson's camp that we saw during the suspension continues, I think the NFL will closely monitor the behavioral expert, and I think we could see a fight at the end of 11 weeks if what they get at the end does not seem to be truly remorseful.
Yeah, and what we're looking at here, just to recap, so Deshaun Watson on Thursday after the settlement had, a word had leaked and then the NFL released their release. I'm not sure of the exact timeline with his press availability, but he said he continues to maintain his innocence and he will stand on that. His agent, David Mulugeta, he later deleted this tweet, but he tweeted out, to be clear, Judge Robinson, referring to Sue Robinson, the arbitrator, who determined that Watson's actions were egregious and predatory, among other things. To be clear, Judge Robinson repeated the NFL's narrative. She received a brief from the NFL weeks before we had the opportunity to talk to her. In our first call with the judge, she referred to, quote, Deshaun Watson's pattern of behavior, end quote. Her mind was made up before we ever presented a counter. He deleted that tweet, and then he sent another tweet a little bit later. Deshaun has always stated he is innocent of sexual assault. Nothing has changed in what he said. He also said he is remorseful. The decisions he made have created the situation. The settlement allows him to move forward with his life and career. So it is abundantly clear at this moment he is not taking responsibility for what went on. If we step back for a moment, obviously the personal conduct policy has been a defining aspect of Roger Goodell's time as commissioner of the league. If I were a kinder person, I would say Commissioner Goodell is very earnest about rehabilitating people and having, you know, players become better men through the personal conduct policy. And for that reason, I don't know, man, like it must have really stung. It must have really stung to put out this press release and be ready to talk about how Deshaun is ready to be better. We're going to help him become better. And then immediately just have him turn around and say, well, I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. I mean, that's the first. Admitting you did something wrong is the absolute first step to getting better.
I think the word would probably be for Roger Goodell, disheartened. I think that would be probably right, because there was this sort of little twinge of progress. There was him coming out and saying, I didn't do anything wrong. And then the 180 snapback and let's go back to the agent's language, right? Which I think is becoming increasingly interesting here. We know that the NFL did not see any cases that they deemed to be violent. Now, Jenny Vrentis, who's great, our best friend, mm-hmm. now works for the New York Times, I think brought up a great point in some of the Deshaun work that she did here that, you know, we're working with a dated definition of violence here, right? I mean, what is violence? If you impact someone psychologically for a very long time and make it difficult for them to go to work or live a life, that's violent. And the NFL wasn't working with that definition. My guess is that will change as we move forward. But the agent's language is very, very clear, right? We didn't assault somebody. Deshaun did something stupid. He regrets it. The end. And there's a massive elephant in the room there in that vacant space between those two statements, which, again, I think is as telling as anything else. They are coming out and basically depending on a legion of morons to interpret this as a brazen victory and stance, when if you parse the language in their words, it's like, yeah, something fucked up happened here. But we're not going to, you know, but it's not by definition this thing. So yeah. We win, you know?
And again, we've talked about this when Jenny has been on the show in the past. The term sexual assault, if you are talking about Texas statutes, and I don't know if I'm going to blow anyone away by saying maybe Texas statutes are not terribly friendly to women, but under Texas statutes, he probably did not commit sexual assault in a lot of these cases. It would have been, you know, the detective who felt he should have been charged felt it should have been indecent assault, which is a misdemeanor. It's a little bit different there. Had this gone down in a different state, New York perhaps, you would probably have a much different legal outcome as far as this behavior goes. So when, you know, certainly they can claim he will not be charged with sexual assault in the state of Texas. That is clear. They're not going back to this. It's just not going to happen. So it's really, it's going to be a matter to be settled in this last civil case. For the few people out there who somehow haven't figured out what went on. But on top of that, you have what David Mulligetta said. You also have what, you know, Quincy Avery on Twitter, the private quarterbacks coach who works with Sean Watson, he suggested that Jenny Vrentis is biased. We have heard Rusty Hardin trot out that claim that Jenny Vrentis is biased in what she does. And I'm just going to point out one more time, and Jenny doesn't need us to defend her. Her work stands on its own as outstanding, and I think most people recognize that. The vast majority of people recognize that. But when we went into this story back in the winter of 2021, we didn't know what we were going to find. We were looking more into Tony Busby, and Tony Busby had some problems with the way he vetted clients. Mary, the woman who gave us her account of her dealing with Deshaun Watson and his problematic behavior, and it did not sue him and did not go to the police and did not speak to the NFL. She just wanted to speak out as a public witness to back some of these claims because she went through a very similar thing. But she talked to Tony Busby's office and did not like how they seemed to be sort of rushing through and didn't feel she was being properly vetted. And therefore, she ended up consulting with a different attorney. We were looking into more of that at the start. We did not have, you know, like it wasn't like, okay, well, let's call 10,000 people and find someone who has something bad to say about Sean Watson. We were just stunned to stumble upon, you know, we're reaching out to massage therapists in the area just to be like, oh, you know, did you hear anything about this? Do you know a rumor? Do you know, have you ever interacted with someone who is maybe one of the plaintiffs? And we were shocked at how many people had their own stories of dealing with Deshaun Watson and his behavior during sessions. So when we first approached Rusty Hardin's office, they felt that we were presuming his guilt and that we were being unfair. It wasn't presuming his guilt. We spent weeks reporting it, And based on the reporting we gathered, that's what it all pointed to. I mean, there was a pretty good reason to presume guilt at that point. And we went to them for answers. They provided what they provided. They provided some statements. And it was thin. I don't know how else you can say it. You know, you can go back and read our pieces, but there just wasn't a whole lot there as far as his defense goes. They might have won some of those cases if they went to civil trials. I think he would have lost quite a few as well. And that's where we are at this point. So Deshaun Watson is clearly surrounding himself with people who are telling him, you didn't do anything wrong. This is, you have been wronged. You have been wronged by a biased media and an ambulance chasing lawyer and all this stuff. And it's just not reality at this point.
And so let's introduce the flip side to that too, Gary, because I think this is important to peel it back. For people who are following the outcome of yesterday on social media, Deshaun Watson's comments followed by sort of a streamline of reporting from your mainstream kind of football press, you would have taken this to be kind of a massive victory for Deshaun. But I think what you had mentioned Quincy Avery, right, who's the private quarterback's coach of Deshaun Watson, David Mulugeta, who's the agent. David Mulugeta works with Athletes First. It's one of the largest sports agencies in the NFL. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott. I mean, mm-hmm. David has a ton of high-profile clients, multiple first-round picks every year. And so, you know, Adam Schefter has to retweet him without context because that's part of the way that Adam gets his information. There are people who work at ESPN or other outlets that have to that will just report. Like I think I saw yesterday that, hey, without any context, hey, they're still mad about this. They don't even think he should get 6 games. Okay, this is part of horse trading, right? In the NFL information business. I would say to some extent we all engage in some form of that, or a lot of people do. But what happens in situations like this is I think it blurs the seriousness of what has happened. And to me, it represents something almost political, right? Where you have a sort of left-leaning press or a right-leaning press that basically hold up these structures or these people as infallible because that's where the flow of information comes from. And again, I mean, you know, are people all guilty of this in some way, shape, or form? Are we more sympathetic, less sympathetic? You know, I'm sure, yes. But that's how some of this stuff happens. And so I think a lot of people were stunned yesterday because, you know, if you see a NFL reporter with 1 million followers retweet somebody that's using very defiant, legally structured language, mm-hmm. that seems important to you, the reader, right? And again, readers are smart enough to make their own, to draw their own conclusions here. But, you know, as an observer, sometimes I take a step back and I say, wow, imagine if I didn't cover the NFL for a second. Imagine if I just fired up Twitter to see what was going on in the middle of my workday. And, you know, I'm not super legal. I'm not super versed in legalese. I don't really know the major players or what's going on. But, hey, this guy's on ESPN. Hey, this guy works for, you know, this outlet. This makes sense. You know, so in a lot of ways, it gets obscured. And I think yesterday was a really kind of stunning example of that, where we've almost sort of tribalized, you know, okay, here are the people who are getting stuff from the Watson camp and they're going to put out something over here. And here are the people who aren't. And it's like, man, this is, it's night and day.
Yep. And obviously Jenny falls into a camp where she is not desperately chasing access. That's not how she works. I mean, that is how journalism is supposed to work when you're covering people.
And I should clarify that, like, yes, there is the camp that, you know, is getting information and needs to keep that flow of information coming, right? There is the camp that probably just, you know, is like, hey, I'm going to come out and I'm just going to take swings at this guy like a pinata and I don't care. And then there are people like Jenny who are just excellent reporters and don't have a bias bone in their body. And I think went out, set out to do something just straight up, you know, fact-finding, information, journalism, like as we used to call it, right? And so that's sort of the landscape that we're dealing with right now.
And I will just add this to wrap up the media aspect of this show. There was, you know, Jenny had put out a story with Ken Belson of the New York Times, a fine reporter in his own right. They tag-teamed the piece that the Times put out yesterday, and they did reach out to David Mulugeta. I believe Ken did, but Mulugeta's comment was, "We're going to stay away from the New York Times. Have a good one." Which, I mean, that's how it works. They are feeding their information to people they know will put it out unvarnished.
Right.
Who will just repeat what they want put out there. And you know, you get to put it under the banner of Outlet X.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reality of it. You know, I'm not going to stand here and say that I'm, you know, that I'm Bob Woodward here and I'm the ombudsman of sports Twitter. You know, I think we all have our flaws and our biases and everything like that. But, you know, yeah, this is the landscape. This is how it's set up right now. And I think it's important for anyone reading this to not really take anything minus a thoroughly reported, "Hey, I'm going to include all sides of this piece," as gospel.
So here we are, Connor, going to be at least 11 games. 11 games is probably still the most likely outcome, but it is probably not etched in stone at this point. And as far as you and I go, we will be back Monday with our usual goofiness. The MMQB NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.